Hello, my name is Rashmi and welcome to the penultimate episode of this podcast series, Road to COP27, Making the Just Transition a Reality. So far, it feels like only in four parts we have started to unpick some of the very broad concepts that encompass what it means to drive a just and equitable energy transition. Today I'm recording from Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, where we have been overwhelmed with the amount of engagements we have had with the largest annual gathering of the climate change community over this past week. We have discussed in detail the need for urgency in action and in implementation when meeting net zero. From the wind side, the need to accelerate permitting and more generally the need to ensure a just transition have been made super clear as objectives that we now need to charge towards. This year, the just transition increased massively up the climate change agenda, and there has never been a more relevant time than now to talk about it. Not only have we been in a COP with a heavy focus on the just energy transition, but we have also had an Africa COP too. An Africa COP will in turn receive more attention on topics like the role of gas in the energy transition, as well as how we involve more rural, marginalised communities into the energy transition. This week, we have been around many tribal and indigenous communities who are stakeholders in the energy transition that we would otherwise in our line of work never come across or very rarely come across. And I've definitely been enjoying the vibrancy and culture that this brings to the conference. However, when we look at the delta between targets and emissions and also between the just transition mechanisms that exist to support workers and communities on the ground versus implementation, there is a lot to be done. I want to draw out some of the key points from this podcast session today on the Africa thematic. So from this podcast episode, I want to draw out some key points today on the Africa thematic. And to do that, I'll be joined by the lovely Wangari Muchiri, our very own Director of Africa Wind Power at the Global Wind Energy Council. Welcome, Wangari. It's an honour to have you on this podcast. And just in terms of your voice as a wind energy expert, I think it's kind of an understatement to say you're a bit of a celebrity here at COP. And so maybe it'd be great if you could say a few words about your background and maybe your experience so far of COP, or maybe some highlights from the week so far.
Great. Thank you. I did not know I was a celebrity, but given that my voice is going, I should know I've done a lot of talking this COP. Thank you so much for having me, Rush. It's great to be here. And I'm excited that we have first this podcast, but two, that we've been really able at both our first COPs to really take it, bite into it, and take the bull by the horns. And I think we really have made a splash on our wind and solar pavilion. I'm excited that we got to meet many, many, many countries that are excited to explore their wind potential. I'm also excited to see countries that, you know, probably would never have had wind farms now considering it. And so I think that's been quite the highlight for me. I think also meeting various stakeholders within the industry. I know a lot of people are talking about this COP being fossil fuel heavy, but we need to have a real transition, we need to include them in the conversations, especially in wind. They have large bank systems, so we need to ensure that they're on the table in the conversation. It's good to be here, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
No, it's great. Thank you for obviously agreeing to do this podcast and joining me. And I think you are just picking up on something that you've said, like including the very wide variety of stakeholders that are here. I mean, I mentioned shortly just before this, that including marginalised and smaller communities is extremely important. And I think it's also really great as well, both being women in the industry, seeing the increase in the number of women that are on speaking panels and the kind of change in this whole MANL model.
Yes.
At GWEC internally, we have a policy that we won't let a panel go or panel session or an event go ahead without female representation from the main board of speakers. And I think you've played a really key part as well in being a strong female voice. And you've had some really good key moments as well. And so just before we jump in, no, you're welcome. Before we jump into the main bulk of the discussion, do you want to maybe just briefly touch on some of the panel opportunities you've had and some of the platforms you've been on?
Yeah, it's gone by so fast in the last 2 weeks. But I think I really want to touch on a few. I had the pleasure of emceeing the Energy Action event, which is organized by the Marrakesh Partnership. And that was really interesting because we had it as a series of TED Talks and had various speakers come on and tell us about the initiatives from all across the world that are happening in the renewable energy space. So it was great also to share the stage with Dr. Mohil Dean, who is the UNFCCC climate champion for Egypt. So it was, I think for me, it was very eye-opening to see how many stakeholders were there, to have really great, you know, networking opportunities from them. But in addition to that, we also had some great panels at the Wind and Solar Pavilion. I think the one that I really enjoyed was the revitalizing Africa's energy mix using renewables. And we discussed, we had great representation from OEMs, both wind and solar, investors, the African Development Bank, and the Solar Power Association in South Africa, SAPFIA. And we were able to get from all angles how we can really scale renewables and wind power in Africa. I think one of the key things that came from it was that in addition to policy and the enabling environment, we need people to come together and collaborate. And, you know, it was easy and good to say on the stage that we had the money guy, we had the technology, we had the organization representing the industry. So it was easy to just say, guys, come together, let's work, let's do this. It's enough talk. How do we get these projects out there? So I think that was a great one. I think I also moderated, I spoke in one last session, which was to do with using science, technology, and innovation for small island developing countries, and how they are able to embrace that to really, and what opportunities are in that for them. And I spoke about offshore wind, which rarely happens in Africa. So it was good to also, you know, kind of step outside that comfort zone and talk about what opportunities are there for these nations. So I think that was, those are some of my panels. I also had quite a number of media moments. Live TV a few times, which was intense, but it was great to plug into Nigeria, which is a country that doesn't have wind, but was interested in the conversation. And so I hope to see and do more of those.
Absolutely. And I think we're excited for you to continue coming to COP. I don't think this is your last COP. No, absolutely. And I mean, it was really great seeing, I mean, not just you, but other members of our team as well, really on large stages, providing some really powerful messaging. And I really hope this continues for us. I think after leaving Sharm, I'll definitely have a lot of optimism and a lot of excitement for the future COPs. I think that's important. I don't think we should be too negative, because the work that we do is pretty intense and pretty negative. So I think platforms like this are great. And so just moving on now to obviously the main bulk of our conversation, and you touched on our revitalizing wind energy as a force for stabilizing the energy supply of Africa, and that session that we convened at the Wind and Solar Pavilion. And so I just want to put it to you, Wangari, how can the role of renewables be positioned as a solution to African countries in helping them reach their industrialization goals? And the reason I ask this is because I feel like before coming to COP, I sensed that there would be some skepticism and some negative remarks around how Africa should be expected to use renewables and develop their renewables industry, in light of the fact that other economies have obviously done so and developed and industrialized through the use of gas. So how do we position our argument to them, and what would you say?
I think your concern around this question is very correct, because there is countries that outwardly say, we have our own gas, and if Europe was able to industrialize gas, we should be able to do so.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's only 16 out of 54 countries in Africa that have that. So this is not a full African picture. This is only a picture of, let's say, the loudest voices around this topic, right? And so I always want to encourage African countries to really look at their own energy mix and their own resources and use the energy that is most affordable to them. And the great thing to say is that right now, renewables are the cheapest. It's quicker to deploy, it's cheaper, so it's more affordable for Africans. And so when you talk about access to energy, what better way to provide energy that is cheap, rather than forcing people to pay a lot of money for fossil fuels that only pollute and destroy their environments? And so renewable energy really is it's a key solution now, because one, it's affordable; two, it's sustainable. Africa has some of the best resources in the world, better than Germany, better than any other country, and they have the potential to be the leaders within the space. So I think we need to look at renewables a bit differently and say, how do we create jobs? in our markets? How do we bring investment into our markets? How do we use a natural resource in our markets? And this is, I mean, the key to all those is renewables. So when I look at the wind power that we have in Kenya, I'm proud to say that we have great resource already. But this is only one country, and this is one out of 54. In addition to what else was talking about, only four countries in Africa have 60% of all significant oil and gas reserves, right?
Yeah.
So as much as I said 16 before, but only 60% is in four countries. So what happens to the rest of the 54 countries who possibly don't have that much, you know, oil and gas? But every country has sun, every country has wind. And I think it's important to look at that as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to debunk these myths about the true landscape, because when we say Africa, I mean, it's too broad in a way. It's like generalizing Europe. There's different situations in each country, and a bespoke approach is needed for all of them. I think that's one thing we've been seeing a lot more on, like in conversations and in engagements we've been having, is that we need a bespoke approach. It's not a one size fits all situation. Right. I think that's really important. And I think the other thing you mentioned as well is the economic benefits as well for, well, I say economic, but socioeconomic, and which is the essence of the just transition. And so the benefits to workers and the benefits to providing jobs, I think, needs to be put ahead of comparing yourselves to the other countries that have experienced industrialization and development before you.
Absolutely. And Africa actually has the youngest population. You know, yes. Majority of our population is below 19 years old. So when they are going to come into the workforce, we're going to need to create jobs for them. And when you look at the industries that are really creating jobs, I'll give an example. Renewables create 7.5 jobs for every $1 million invested.
Wow.
And fossil fuels only create 2.5. So that's three times more jobs because of choosing a better technology, right? And so I think some of those, as much as we talk about energy, the co-benefits are even more. The employment it creates, the sustainability is much more important than even just the energy that we get, the electron that we get.
Absolutely. And also in terms of the numbers that you've just stated, I mean, these are probably numbers that people aren't aware of. And I think just in terms of quantities, if we want to zoom in on that, people aren't aware of these statistics, which obviously we're here to sort of push out there, and we're here to make more aware and make people more aware of this. And just another point to pick up on is that a lot of African countries, even if they're not too concerned about using gas, they also, this is sort of paired with a lack of understanding of their wind resource. So a lot of countries don't know that they have great wind resource or that they have so much untapped potential. And so that's another sort of challenge we've been trying to address here at COP with all the people that we've been engaging with. And so just moving on, Mongari, obviously you've been speaking to way more, a lot more African delegates. I've been speaking to everyone more broadly, but you've definitely been well in there with the African community, and it's been great. And so what are some of the specific challenges that are faced in Africa from the work you've done, or maybe not from the work you've done, that have appeared in the conversations this year at COP?
Thank you. So I think one of the key challenges that I'm seeing is the lack of knowledge and understanding of the wind industry. And I've noticed in some countries, yesterday I think I sat in a presentation from the Angolan delegation, and they spoke at the beginning of the presentation about how great wind resource they have. But when it came to actually identifying the projects that they were going to go on with, wind was left off that list. Yeah. And so I made sure I stood up and said, what about the wind? You've just identified that you have great resource, but you're not talking about putting any projects into place. And they explained that they actually just don't have the expertise, right? And so now, you know, we got their contact, and we will connect them with GIWEC and Africa Wind Power and help support that. But I think that is really the challenge. I think in some places I've heard people tell me outright, there's no wind in our country, and that is not possible. It's not possible. So I think that's something that we need to really look at, educate people around this wind. And this is why we do these capacity building workshops that we do in Africa Wind Power. We've done two so far in Kenya and Mozambique, but I'm hoping that next year we're able to really ramp that up and look at other countries that have great potential, have a need for energy, especially cheaper energy, and are looking to transition. And that's possibly going to be a good motivator for that. The other challenges that we see is the lack of financing for early stage projects. And early stage projects, you know, when you have you know, the mom or dad who decides, oh, this could be a great win site, and, you know, starts to do the measurements. A lot of investors don't want to come in at that early stage. It's too risky. So we need to find a way to finance these early stage projects so that we can get to a point where we have a pipeline of really early stage projects that now bigger investors can come in and buy the projects, or, you know, complete them or take them to financial close. And we're not seeing that in Africa. So for now, you know, one of the things that has come up in this COP is, you know, maybe starting a wind farm incubator where you have, you know, teach people about how to do wind measurements, how to start the process of, you know, developing a wind farm, so that by the time big investors come in and want to put their money into projects, they're really well solidified projects, or really well started projects. So that's another challenge. And I'd say the final challenge that we have is we need to train a lot more renewable energy engineers within Africa. So as much as we have, you know, a large workforce, and we have people who are willing to work, we also need to equip them with the technical skills to be able to work on a wind farm, whether it's on maintenance or whether it's on development or building out the wind farm or the foundations. I think those are, or even biodiversity, right? Those are roles that local people can take up, and we need to find a way to just really skill these people to be able to take that up in the jobs.
Absolutely. And I think just looking at the benefits to workers in particular, I mean, obviously, we've just stated the potential is incredible, and it's something that needs to be tapped into. But just like from my own experience and from other experiences that I've reflected on, and from some of the Just Transition sessions we've had this week, I think there's a sense of there's not really like a clear stream or like a clear direct route of entry. For doctors, you study medicine, you go and become a doctor. For other professions, it's like a very direct stream, and we don't have that yet. And I think that's something we could do a lot better in, in the form of like skills transfer and certification to allow people who have intent to work in the or form part of the green economy to actually go about doing that. I mean, we are running out of time. So I think really ramping up our efforts to support workers in doing this is going to be important. So I think that all the three challenges you covered are extremely important and extremely relevant. And
sorry, Rasha, allow me to also add one more.
Yeah, go for it.
It's something that I want to touch on, but, you know, it comes under the policy and enabling framework. We need to kind of remove the red tape around this, you know, the process it takes to also register wind farms and to get power purchase agreements. I think that process also is delaying wind farms quite a bit. So even if they are great wind farms that are, you know, being developed, it takes almost 8 years or more to develop one. Which should not be the case. You know, a wind farm should be up in 2 to 3 years after you've done 1 year of wind studies, depending how big it is. So I think that's another thing. So just encouraging governments to make sure that they also make those processes streamlined. Maybe you go to one authority instead of seven, right, to get certain licenses and permitting. And I think that's very important as well.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And also just to note, the stop-start nature of projects really sends poor signals to investors.
Absolutely.
You are not going to be able to be attractive to any type of investor if you just don't show reliability in the fact that you can actually put up a wind farm in a short amount or a reasonable amount of time. I mean, that's another thing. Without going too off topic, permitting, everyone has been screaming permitting this week. We need to cut down timelines for wind farms or for solar projects. We need to be faster. And I think this, you know, it's all a knock-on effect. It all affects different aspects of the supply chain. And I feel like this is just something that next year I would actually like to stop talking about permitting. I would love to see action taken this year so that next year we can actually focus on things like the Just Transition, which are more broad and harder to define and harder to sort of say, yes, we are doing a Just Transition, because it's not something we can currently say. Absolutely. And then just to sort of like look forward at some of the announcements that have been made this week. Obviously, we all know about, or most of us know about, the South African JETP models, the Just Energy Transition Partnership model, and how the South Africans have basically almost led in that space by creating a mechanism like the JETP model. And then this week we've had the Indonesian JETP, which has been launched as well. And so I think there's kind of an anticipation that there'll be the rise of the JETP model and that this will become a mechanism more frequently used by countries to ensure a just and equitable energy transition. And so I just want to ask you, Wangari, In addition to this year being labelled the implementation COP, how do you see the JETP model working for African countries? And what are your comments on this model as a mechanism in general?
Yeah, I think in terms of the JETP model, I think it's quite innovative, and I'm glad South Africa was the pioneer of this in the last COP, and we're seeing a lot of other countries now start to follow that model. One of the things that I think we need to have as African countries also, we need to really cost out what a real energy transition would look like, a just and equitable energy transition. And we need to price that and say, end to end, this is what, you know, we estimated costs, so that when you go out to different donors and different countries and for partnership, it's kind of you're able to really determine what the full picture is like. With the JETP model, we find that now for South Africa has to determine which priorities this $8.5 billion goes to. And of course, there's certain priorities. There's the angle of people and reskilling people working in coals and mines to work in renewables. There's the angles of technology. There's the angle of buying actual energy. And so where does this $8.5 billion come to in all? I know priorities are just as important.
Feels
as
like
each
a
other.
Constant opportunity cost, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why I think it's really important for countries looking to employ the JETP model to really focus and hone in on what the full transition will look like, where their priorities are, so that when the money is committed and paid out, they're able to easily just, you know, assign it and get to work, right? But in regard to the full process, I think it's the way to go. We're seeing Nigeria also working on just energy transition. Right. A JETP type. Ghana is working on the same. Kenya is now looking to do the same. So there's so many countries that really want to take this model, because it also enables them to really say, if you know, these are really our true needs to be able to transition. And I'm glad that we are seeing even Asian countries take that, because also this shows South-South relationship and how we can also learn from each other as much as we learn from the North, right? So I feel with the JETP partnerships and with the model that we have launched, I look forward to seeing more. I look forward to seeing collaboration between different JETPs.
Yes.
And I think there's economies of scale that come with it in some regard. And I think that would be a good thing for wind and solar as well, including them into those JETPs.
Absolutely. And I think as well, I think it sends a clear signal that all these African countries implementing JETPs and starting that conversation is a clear signal that they're invested in renewables. They want it to happen. They want it as much as we want it. And I really like the point you said. It's about global South countries learning from each other as well. There's a massive narrative that like the global North needs to almost take the global South under its wing and sort of carry it through this transition, which I think is true. And we do, I mean, coming from the global North, have a role and a duty of responsibility to help these countries. But in addition, it'd be really nice to see a mixture of collaborations. And so in every podcast episode, Mungaru, if you haven't listened to all of them already, is that I like to do a what's next kind of segment, where I basically just ask you what you would like to see next. And I think instead of focusing on the Africa narrative and the gas narrative and the sort of position of renewables, I'd like to ask you what you would like to see happen at next year's COP instead. So what is one thing you'd really like to see as either an outcome or something on the agenda from next year's COP, or even just as a post-COP outcome? What is something that you would really like to see happen as an action?
One of the things that I would love to see, and I think this, my mom's always told me to dream big. I would like to see each country in Africa commit to over 1 gigawatt of wind power. And I want one gigawatt is at minimum, right? So we want to see that, and within the next 5 years, right? So I want to see countries come together, put in bold commitments in regard to wind and solar, maybe even have it as a percentage of their energy mix, right? And say, you know, as whichever country, I want to commit 20% of my, you know, my my grid to, or my energy mix to renewables, and a certain percentage to wind. And so for me, that is what I'm going to kind of take with me and work on for the next year. Hopefully at COP28, we'll have some great announcements to make. But for that pipeline to really come, we need to have policy in place. We need to have government will and goodwill in place. And we need to make sure that we have the technology ready. So all the challenges that we've been going through in our supply chain post-COVID, we need to fix those. We need to fix some of those challenges. And this is also, calling out also the OEMs to also just find solutions to these challenges that we've been facing that have increased the costs of wind power components, and bringing that back onto the table, because wind and solar are truly the cheapest sources of energy for Africans.
Yeah, I really enjoyed telling people about this week, that actually we are cost competitive beyond belief. And I think that's something that, you know, makes it almost, it's like a no-brainer to go with renewables. And so I think, yeah, one thing I definitely like to see is just some things coming off the agenda. I think we've been talking about certain topics for so long. And I think within the private sector, we interact mostly with the private sector, and knowing how knowledgeable they are and how passionate they are and how little sometimes this translates into actual policy actions. I think I would just really love to see certain things coming off the agenda, like grids. I mean, we've got some really passionate people doing extremely amazing work on grids. I'd really like to see, you know, the importance of grid infrastructure sort of taken seriously and actioned by a lot of countries, and in addition permitting. So those are my two concluding remarks from this week here at COP. But thank you so much, Wangara. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really look forward to seeing what comes of your work with Africa Wind Power and your work in the region, and also seeing you next year at COP and seeing you be an absolute superstar.
The role of gas in Africa is one of the stories we are monitoring closely and are hoping to have an increasing impact on when helping Africa to reach higher levels of development, in addition to supporting them with clean industrialisation. If you are interested in topics like this and all things wind, please feel free to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and of course visit our website at grec.net. Thank you for listening.